Hello and welcome to The Laydown, a Gibson's Bookstore podcast. I'm Ryan, my pronouns are she, her.
I'm Ashley, also she, her.
I'm Kate, I'm also she, her.
Hi friends!
Hello!
We waited until the very last day of the month to record this because we are busy.
Hey man, it's still July.
It is July.
We're crushing this.
We
actually
are.
And if it's anything like last time, I won't have to edit at all. Although, I will say right off at the top that Ashley and I already had a discussion about how this one is probably going to be a little bit explicit, and there's going to be some swearing based on just the context of what we're going to be talking about today. So if you don't like cussing, this one might not be for you.
Have your earmuffs ready, kids.
We are in a little bit going to talk about some books where like is a strong word. And we've interpreted that a few different ways.
They are definitely books.
They are books.
Yep, and we read them.
We sure did read them.
There were feelings.
Did we like them?
Will we hand sell them to you? Depends on the book.
Depends on how much of a weirdo you are.
So we will get into that shortly, but first, it's been a whole month. What the heck have we read? Who wants to go first?
Books.
What are books? Hold on.
What are books?
I need to look at my story graph because I've never read a book in my life.
It's the only way that I keep track of anything. I finished a book, I think, yesterday, and I don't remember what it was.
Oops.
Unless I look at my story graph, and then I'm like, oh, yeah, right.
So I suppose this means I should start a story graph instead of just all these notes to myself all over the place.
I do like your handwritten notes, though.
Here's the thing. You need story graph, but also notes.
Yeah.
Because what if the internet dies?
What if?
I hope the internet dies.
I mean, yeah. I wouldn't be mad at it.
Me neither.
I could live through the internet not existing.
I mean, we didn't start off with it.
Right.
We could go back to not having it.
We didn't start the internet fire.
But we might finish it.
I've gotten what I need from it.
Yeah. I mean, is it the basis of the majority of my job? Yeah. But, you know,
you'll figure it out.
You're resourceful. I can market the bookstore without the internet.
I think it's time to go back to big, glorious, hand-lettered posters.
Yeah.
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 It's old circus poster style.
I could learn how to be a sign spinner.
Yeah.
I can stand on the corner and spin a sign that just says Gibson's. Books!
Gibson's.
Just books with a big arrow. I just dance on the... Anyway. Actually, after all that, do you want to go first?
I can.
Sweet.
A couple of my recent reads are what inspired this month's topic, so
nice.
There will be some overlap. But when we last spoke, I was just about to finish The Lilac People, which I did finish that night. And if you recall, I was optimistic that the end would not be as sad as maybe I thought it would be. Turns out it was worse.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
It was the worst roller coaster ever.
Oh, no.
But such a good book, and I would hand sell it to you, given the right circumstances. Just, you know, have a tissue or two nearby. I went right from that into Andrew Joseph White's upcoming adult novel, which I had the arc of just waiting, and that's a book. I will discuss in more detail once we are on to the actual topic.
Incredible. Can't wait.
I was close to finishing that book when we went away for a little beach weekend. I stupidly did not bring another book with me.
Oh, no.
I just didn't think I was actually going to have that much reading time because it never works out that we do, but this time I did. Tim, on the other hand, did not even touch his book, and he had brought a backup, so he let me use his backup book, which was The Beast in the Clouds, the Roosevelt Brothers' Deadly Quest to Find the Mythical Giant Panda, which came out either very end of June or, like, early July. It was really, really good.
Amazing.
Yeah, so we all know, like, Daddy was a badass, turns out. Also, so were his sons, and, up until that time, like, no one had really seen pandas, like, alive in the wild. Like,
and lived to tell the tale.
Like, a handful of people had and, like, brought news of them back to the rest of the world. And, like, some, like, panda skins were in circulation. But, like, were they actual panda skins? Or were they, like, other bears that just got dyed to be like, hey, look, we found this weird bear.
Yeah.
And so they were like, I'm going to find this bear. They did.
Amazing.
Yep. They killed a bunch of them to bring back for, I think, the Chicago Natural History Museum. But in the course of ultimately hunting the pandas, they were like, maybe we don't like hunting things that much anymore. We feel really bad about this one.
I mean.
Yeah, so that one was a rad. And then another one that I'll talk about later, also Kate might have on her list, depending on how she interpreted this epic, Orpheus Builds a Girl. it's a book. More details to come.
A book we read.
Yep.
It's got words and everything.
And then the most recent one that I finished was Uncommon Type, which is a collection of short stories by Tom Hanks that I was using for my book written by a celebrity reading challenge prompt. They're short stories. I love Tom Hanks, and so in my head I heard all of them in his voice, and it was delightful. They're short stories. Some are better than others. Yeah.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
I like it.
Nice.
Yeah, I'm reading a book now. I don't know what it is.
Oh, are you?
I have a rest. Listen. Brains malfunction sometimes.
We don't brain. Incredible.
Yeah. So that's fantastic. That's my list to date since the last time.
I love it. I have read a bunch of things since the last time. I
we believe you.
I mean, some of them were very short, which helped. I listened to a new book called Of Monsters and Mainframes by Barbara Truelove, and it was very fun. It's a story of the Demeter from Dracula fame, but she is a spaceship, not a regular ship, and it's in the future, and Dracula shows up, but so do all the other, like, universal monsters. Yeah. It is so much fun, and it's just this ship, basically, like, the AI of the ship, just doing battle with monsters and trying to, like, save passengers, but, like, people keep dying, and so she starts being called, like, a ghost ship because they're keeping, like, one survivor on her excursions. It's really fun. It's all from her perspective. I will say, if you listen to the audiobook, there are multiple points, including the very beginning of the book, where there's just a bunch of binary, and so it's just 10001011001 for like 5 full minutes. And I was talking to Arden in the cafe about this because she also listened to this, and she was like, I was walking to work and I had my headphones in and the book started and it was doing that and I almost walked into traffic. I was like, honestly, if I hadn't, like, opened the physical book at one point and noticed that it started with that, I would have thought that I was glitching and I would have just stopped. So just a heads up that there that happens. It is part of the story. You can, like, skip through it. But it's delightful. It's really, really fun. What are some other ones? I read The White Python World Tour by Travis Kennedy, which I know Kate also read. What a fun book. The audiobook is read by Will Wheaton. So that was fun. He does great. It is a hilarious book about a metal rock band that basically is being used by the government to do some things to help out the United States in a war. It's very funny. And there's so much good, like, music references in it that I made a whole Spotify playlist of bands and songs that were referenced in it, and it's become my running playlist. Nice. So that's fun. I'll do an actual, like, staff pick review for that one at some point once I've collected my thoughts about it, but it's real good, and I liked it a lot, and you don't have to know anything about, like, 80s bands to enjoy it. It will help, but you don't need to. It's real goofy and real fun.
Yeah, it's inspired by the whole news story from a couple of years ago about how the Scorpions song Wings of Change was maybe a CIA plant to take down the USSR.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's that plus Spinal Tap plus it's just, it's delightfully goofy.
It's really silly and really fun, and I had a great time.
Makes you want to wear spandex!
It sure does. It sure does. I read a very cute romance novel called Well Actually by Maisie Eddings, which is basically Chicken Shop Date, but in book form.
Ooh.
And so it's about a girl who has basically a Chicken Shop Date type channel where she has, like, celebrities, but they're very, like, D-list celebrities come on, and they eat food, they eat chicken, and she interviews them, and then they have this little, like, date, and whatever. And, her, basically, she goes accidentally viral one night because she's drunk, and she's on TikTok, and she's scrolling through TikTok, and she sees a TikTok of this guy basically giving, like, dating advice. And it's her ex.
Ooh.
And she makes a very funny TikTok in which she stitches his and is like, yeah, no, he couldn't satisfy me, he ghosted me, like, all this stuff. She just, like, goes on this rampage, and he's, like, at this point, very well known on the internet for being, like, a feminist, like, hey, men, here's how you actually treat a woman, and everyone loves him, and she's like, nah. And that goes viral. And instead of being fired, her team is like, this is genius, he's your next guest.
Womp womp.
And she's like, no. And basically his team is like, even better, you guys are going to go on 6 dates.
That's too many dates.
And it's going to be all filmed, and it's all going to be content, and then at the end of those 6, because I think it was like, in when they were together in college, I think they went on 6 dates, and then bad things happen. So he was like, I'm gonna redeem myself, and you have to give me the exact same amount of time as before. And it's very funny, it's very cute, and naturally they end up falling in love, because of course they do, because it's a romance novel, and there's a happy ending. And it's delightful. And I found myself chuckling many times at just their antics. It's just really fun. I read a couple classics, which is crazy, but I did it. I listened to Animal Farm, which I somehow never got around to in school.
Yay!
So, finally listened to that. What a good time. Mm-hmm. I don't think I need to summarize it for anyone. It's Animal Farm.
Four legs good, two legs bad.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then I read Jaws for my Jack of All Graves book club, which is, has not aged well, but the scenes in which the shark is attacking someone are genuinely great, and then the rest of it I kind of didn't care about. Like, I did not care about the people. I just kept wanting to skip over. There's a whole subplot where one of them is having an affair with the other one's wife, and I was like, I don't care! This isn't in the movie!
Unless they're having an affair with the shark, I'm not interested.
I'm not interested. Yeah, Hooper's having an affair with... So, I don't know. It's bad. He is bad.
Now, if Hooper was having an affair with Quint...
No, I wish. Quint is very funny in the book as well as in the movie. But... Yeah, there's a couple of scenes. There's at least one of the shark attacks that is from the shark's perspective, and it's very good. and like in that, it switches POVs to the girl who's being attacked, and there's this line where she like feels something on her leg and she reaches down and her leg is no longer there. And it's really good. It's like a really well written scene, and I was like, more of that, please. So yeah, I mean, it's like, if you are a Jaws super fan, it's, you know, worth it just to have read it, but like is a strong word, you know what I mean? There's lots of racism and stuff in it. It's not great.
Boo.
Oh, I read a really interesting true crime memoir called Raised by a Serial Killer. It's by this woman, April Bellaccio, and her father was Edward Wayne Edwards, who she did not discover until she was an adult that he was a serial killer.
Yikes.
And she is the one who basically turned him in. Oh, and so the book is, yeah. So the book is her childhood with this guy. You know how, like, usually you'll hear, it's like, oh, so-and-so, we suddenly know that the person is a serial killer, and everyone's like, oh my god, they were so nice, they're so charming, blah, blah, blah.
They light up the room.
Strangers, or like neighbors, said that about this guy, but his family is like, he was so abusive and so evil and awful, and like, there were good days that made you go like, yeah, I will do anything to have a good day because the good days are so good. And then there were bad days where they were like, I don't even want to come home. Really, really scary dude. And so it's like her whole like childhood until she finally like is old enough to leave the house, to like get out. And she, I forget what connections she starts making. I think there's like someone goes missing or turns up dead, and it's someone who has such a specific connection with her dad that she's like, I wonder. And she starts looking back at like cold cases from all of these different places where they lived when she was little. Ooh. And she starts piecing it together, and like, yeah, so she gets him caught. Whoa. And he goes to prison, and he ended up dying in prison, and like this
wild.
All
dang
real. it is wild to have it from her perspective of just like, yeah, this was my dad. Mm-hmm. And this is what happened, and yeah, crazy, crazy story. So I do really recommend that one. And then I just finished a book coming out in September called Watching Evil Dead. This is a nonfiction book by Josh Malerman. It's his first nonfiction, and it's... I guess we're probably going to shelve it in memoir, but it kind of defies... It all takes place in one night, and it's a night when him and his now fiance Allison go to her cousin's house to watch Evil Dead because she's never seen it. Ooh. And so they are going to watch Evil Dead together. And so it's Josh and Allison and then her cousin and her cousin's girlfriend. And over the course of the night, they watch The Evil Dead, they watch Evil Dead 2, they watch the remake. Like, they end up having, like, a movie marathon. And, like, Josh is having these kind of revelations about writing because this night takes place, like, within, like, a week or a couple weeks of him signing the deal for Bird Box to be published.
Oh,
so
wow.
He's like brand new. And so he's grappling with this idea of what does the artist deserve? What does the writer deserve? And so he's like, it's very introspective in that sense. And him just kind of like rattling this idea around of like, what do I deserve? Do I deserve a book deal? Do I deserve a movie deal? Do I deserve anything? Right. And then on the outside, the cousin and the girlfriend are actively breaking up.
Oh, no.
Oh, boy.
And it's really interesting the way he frames things because he'll talk about, like, other points in his life from the past, things that will happen in the future. And it all is, like, swirling around this one night of watching Evil Dead and, like, talking about the genius of the movie and all this. It's really interesting. It's really... I love the way it's framed. He's very good at, like, having a core sort of storyline and then, like, spiraling around it. It's a very similar story structure to, like... Daphne, I guess, where it's like you have the thing and then you're kind of spiraling out and then coming back down and like spiraling out and then coming back into it. Like it's really interesting. So I really recommend it.
Dang it, Ryan. Now you made me think about Daphne.
Sorry.
Not
oh, God.
Think about Daphne.
She's going to come for us all.
Daphne.
Oh, no, Daphne.
Dang it. I've been doing well, too.
Yeah. See, I'm never not thinking about Daphne, so I think
so
that's my secret.
Safe.
Yeah, I'm always safe. I'm like the Hulk.
When I think safety, I think the Hulk.
He's always angry.
It's true. Because he's always
secret.
Thinking about
Daphne.
Daphne.
And then I'm currently reading two books. One of them is another book coming out in September. It's Acquired Taste by Clay McLeod Chapman. This is a book of short stories that I am only reading during my lunch break, which is a hilarious time to read a Clay
book.
Except for that one. Except for that one. Debride mint. Don't read that while eating. It's real gross. I knew that going in. That's why I skipped it. I didn't skip it, but I read it outside of eating. I read it in the doctor's office, actually, in the waiting room, which was a perfect place to read it.
Sterile.
Yeah. But it is really fun to kind of pick away at because each story is, you know, its own little crazy Clay story, right? So you kind of do need to, like, take a breath before you get to the next one. And some of these I have heard him read at various events, and then some I'm like, oh, this is, like, this would become, like, wake up and open your eyes. Like, oh, this is a seed that became this other thing, and I recognize that, or things like that. So it's been really fun to do these little, like, bite-sized stories of his. And boy, oh boy, is he good at a short story. He really just throws you right into the mix and then rips you right back out at the end. And you're just like, what did I just read? Why am I afraid of baby carrots now? Oh, God. So that comes out in September, and Clay will be here. Shocking, I know. October 22nd. He's going to be here for a fun little horror panel that we just finalized that will be him, Delilah S. Dawson, and CJ Lead. And I am very, very excited. So it's going to be October 22nd. Please come. It's going to be a really good time. And then the last one that I'm reading is called Siri, Who Am I? I got this book as an ARC, like, 2 years ago, maybe. And I kept meaning to read it, and I kept just, like, not, because I shelved it on my shelf and therefore forgot about it. And then I realized I had the audiobook of it, and so I'm listening to it now, and it's wild. It's about this woman who wakes up in the hospital with amnesia. She's, like, been in a coma. She has no idea who she is. Siri can only give her her first name. She has no text messages. Like, she's deleted her text history. She has, like, no contacts. Like, her phone is useless, essentially. And she, like, tries to call. Like, she has one contact that says mom. She tries to call it. It's like, this number has been disconnected. And she's like, I don't even know my mom's phone number. Like, what is going on? And she finds, like, an address in her phone or something. I forget how it is. Or it's, like, she's, like, in the Uber app or something. And she basically finds her way to a house. And she has a key to this house. And she goes in. And it's not her house, but it might be a boyfriend's house. But the boyfriend's not there because there's a house sitter there. So, basically, she and this house sitter are, like, all right, let's figure out who you are. Oh, like, what's going on? And she sets off on this, like, adventure, and she keeps finding out these crazy things about herself. Like, maybe she owns a multi-million dollar company? Question mark? And, like, it's funny. It's kind of, it's adventurous. It's mysterious. I'm not done yet, so I still don't know, like, what all of the things are. I'm still figuring out who she is. But it's really fun to watch her try to solve the mystery of who she is. And it definitely made me go, I should probably put something in my notes app or something that's like, this is who you are, this is your family, this is where you work, these are things you need to know. Like, I should make sure that I have, like, an emergency thing.
The uh-oh file.
The uh-oh file, just in case I, like, wake up and have no idea who I am. But yeah, it's very funny. It's also very, like, pre-2020, you know, technology, and I don't know, I just feel
the, like, olden days.
Yeah. But it's a good time. And so that's my list.
Nice.
Kate, it's your turn.
Hello. So I've read some stuff. And I'm reading some stuff.
Hooray! Oh.
Gonna do a throwback here. I think, Ryan, this was on your maybe. You want to pre-order this book? And I can say now, heck yeah, you want to pre-order this book. Sarah Gailey's Spread Me is one of the most bananas books I've come across in a while. And within, forget 20 pages, within 20 sentences, you are strapped in, eyes held open like Clockwork Orange, and you are not getting out. It's fantastic. It's, it's a bunch of researchers at a remote desert location, cut off from the world, cut off from each other. There's this kind of disease thing that gets in despite how careful they are, but research people are never careful enough. I'm always surprised by this. But on top of just, there's this virus thing, the main character is also super into viruses and trying her best to keep it together while everything literally gets turned inside out. It is gross and I love it.
It's so good.
It's so good. It's great. And I can't wait to have somebody come in and say, hey, what should I read? And then I, like an animal, pop up behind the counter and just go, spread me! But, oh, it's great.
Next surprise bundle that gets ordered. Doesn't even matter what they give us to go off of. We'll put
nope,
that one in.
That one's going in.
Spread man.
Another one that was handed to me by Ryan, and is also coming out in October, is Breathe In, Bleed Out.
Yay!
Yeah, it's by Brian McCauley, who is obsessed with VHS horror, and especially Scream, like the afterword, the little bit of nonfiction afterword about how much he loves horror movies is just so delightful and very, very similar to my own experiences with them and whatnot. So it's nice to come from that same sort of time zone. But this is a group of yuppie ding dongs. And one girl who's super traumatized and is still a ding-dong, but it's not entirely her fault, go again to the desert. Guys, stop going to the desert. To this wellness retreat in the desert run by a white guy who goes by Guru.
No.
And
danger.
They
danger.
Are hunted by possibly an undead gold miner bandit.
You do.
It was a one-day read. I read it while on the side of a pool in public, and so I kept going, ah! Ah! Ha-ha! Woo! And I definitely kind of dropped the book into the water on more than one occasion because I was laughing at the chaos. But I highly recommend that one. That was a lot of fun.
When he sent me the ARC, it came with grippy socks.
Yep.
And like sweatband. And I was like, thank you, sir.
Makes sense.
He's delightful.
It's so much fun, and the cover art's great too.
Yeah,
it looks like a pulpy comic book. It's gorgeous.
Yeah.
This comes out next week, I believe. It's called Automatic Noodle.
Yay!
By Annalie Newitz. Mm-hmm. And it's a great little novella about robots who start their own noodle shop.
Oh.
And that's all I need to say. It's going to make you hungry. Mm-hmm. It's going to make you happy. It's going to make you think about robot rights. But it's delightful. And that's another really quick read. Ashley and I both read Orpheus Builds a Girl by Heather Perry, which is a book that we read. And then right now I'm reading Barbara, a novel, which I knew nothing about. I just thought the cover looked cool and I picked it up, and it's this woman who's an actress in the 70s right now, and she's talking about growing up with her glamorous and destructive mother and brilliant but troubled father who was working on atomic bomb projects. So, again, more desert stuff.
My goodness.
The desert is the place not to be, as far as I can tell, but I'm really liking it so far. And I'm also really liking Sunburn by Chloe Michelle Howarth. It is 1997, and it's teen girls in Ireland figuring out they're probably lesbians.
Yes. I love that.
It's a great little slice of life, and the language is really fun, and just kind of the balance of, are you supposed to be with the boy who grew up next to you, or are you supposed to be with this girl that you are obsessed and terrified of? It's great. It is very, 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 very much what it's like to be a teen. So, yeah, that's what I'm reading right now.
Amazing.
Yeah.
How did we come up with this topic? Was it you and I were having a conversation, mm-hmm. Ashley?
Yeah, I think it was right after I finished You Weren't Meant to Be Human.
Yeah.
And I think Kate may have already presented me with Orpheus Builds a Girl with her own preface to it that led me to believe it might be a weird one. And we just hadn't come up with a topic yet.
Yeah.
And that one seemed to just fall into place.
Yeah. So, all right. Just to be clear, we're not going to be, like, mean about books, but...
Not on purpose.
Not on purpose. No. But these are books... Okay, some of these are books that we love so much, but we don't... We just... It's insane, and it maybe wasn't like a fun time reading the book, but ultimately we're like, I think I liked that. Some of these are books that are just kind of a hard sell. Some of these are books that were just like, I mean, I read it. I don't know if I'd hand sell it, but maybe.
if you ask me questions, I'll have answers.
Yeah, yeah. So there's kind of many layers to this. For example, like my first book that came to mind for this was House of Leaves. Because I'm like, when I'm actively reading it, I love it. It's dense, it's confusing, it's weird, it's hard to describe, but I love it. But as soon as I stop reading it, as soon as I put it down, I never want to pick it up again. So, like, will I ever hand sell it? I mean, if someone asks me for a recommendation, I'm probably not going to reach for that one first. But if someone says, should I read House of Leaves? I'm going to be like, I mean, probably. So that's an example of where we're going with this.
Do you have a book that'll make my tummy hurt?
Yes. Like another one that sprang to mind right away is really like anything by Cassandra Kaw, because their books are very divisive among readers. People either like them or hate them. And I ultimately like them, but I have found that I often have to reread them a few times to even understand what happened. Mm. That is fine because they're very short. but it's not always the experience that one wants when reading a book. I think they are beautifully written. I think the stories are really rich and interesting. But again, sometimes I'm like, I finish it, I'm like, what the fuck did I just read? What just happened? What was that? Do I know anything that just happened? And I'll talk to someone else who also read it, and they'll be like, oh yeah, and then when this happens, and I'm like, what are you talking about? That didn't happen. And then I have to reread it. So, you know, things like that. So I know that we all have kind of various interpretations, so we can kind of bounce around, but those are a couple that I thought of immediately. I don't know if you want to talk about the Andrew Joseph White one right off the bat.
Yeah, sure. So we've talked about Andrew many times already, because every book is awesome. Mm-hmm. But this will be the first non-YA one. You Weren't Meant to Be Human. It's, I don't think it was the future. If it is, it's like very, very near future, like 2027 or something. But it's basically now, except that some like alien thing in the form of like worms has taken over. They have like cells throughout, and it's like kind of culty, and they like recruit troubled people and who are like looking for meaning in their life, and then weird shit happens. Mm-hmm. The main storyline is this trans man who gets pregnant, and the worms are forcing him to go through with
no.
it.
Yikes.
It's awful.
Oh, no!
It's so, so awful. But so good!
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And so in my chaos notes for this episode, I basically went back through my book journals and was just looking for my notes on them that had the vibe of, like, what the fuck? Why did I like that? Mm-hmm. And so my note for this one was super aggressive. Feels weird to say I liked it, and yet? When it is out, I will hand sell it to you. Just know that you're in for a wild ride, and you probably won't like most of it. but also you will.
Super valid.
Yeah. That one was a wild time.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like that there are definitely a few authors, in horror specifically, who I'm like, I love these books, but for example, there is a collection of books that I will not ever let Elizabeth turn into blind dates, because I'm like, no, I need to like talk through the triggers with people. Alison Rumfitt, anything by Alison Rumfitt is going to be a 10 out of 10, and also it's going to upset you in ways you never even conceived of. And it's just going to be really hard to read. Gretchen Felker Martin is another one that's like, this book is awesome. It's going to hurt you, and you're going to get really upset, and you're going to get mad at characters that you don't want to be mad at because of who they are, but they're doing stupid things, and so then you feel like a bad person for being mad at them, but they're doing stupid things, but you're like, who am I to be judging these people? It's gonna really make you question yourself a lot, but ultimately you're gonna be like, I think I liked that, and maybe I need to look at myself a lot. Okay. You know, the things like that. Eric LaRocca is another one who I'm like, yeah, their books are gonna hurt you, but you're gonna like say thank you at the end. So like, let them hurt you, and then when you're finished, you're gonna be like, wow, that was
I needed that.
Yeah, that was actually like gorgeous and cathartic and like, wow. But also, what the fuck did I just read? So yeah, I get that. Yeah,
yeah,
that is valid.
There was the Roosevelt book in between, but Orpheus Builds a Girl was like next up. Do you want to introduce your hang-ups with it before I profess my love for it?
Yes, I want to hear this dichotomy.
So Orpheus Builds a Girl was another galley that we were all excited about and all passing around.
Someone presented it to you as our next Victorian Psycho?
So I think I handed it to you and I said, I don't know what this is, but I feel like a lot of us are going to like it.
Okay. Yeah.
I think that's how I phrased it.
Okay.
And then I accidentally said the opening sentence out loud when talking about
the book. While I was looking at the first page, Kate said the exact first sentence, and I was like, well, you are the first one to read this.
You are the chosen one.
Something along the lines of, I'm the devil, and I'm here to say. And that's pretty much exactly what was there. So it's a, it's based on a real story about an unethical doctor who becomes deeply fascinated with a living and very ill and very young girl who perishes in his care. He either, depending on how you read the book or think about the true story, believes that he is truly in the act of preserving and bringing her cells back to life by creating this terrifying mummy, or is just a delusional bonkers nut. Mm-hmm. Two things can be true. That's another thing with this book. A lot of things can be true. Uh-huh. It's well written. Mm-hmm. The story is compelling. It goes back and forth between the doctor's memoirs, which he keeps saying over and over are his medical notes, but he has very little medical information about them, which is weird, and the accounts of the sister of the girl who got dollified.
Oh, no.
Yes. The doctor is, and this is not a surprise or whatnot, the doctor was doing experiments on humans in Nazi Germany, is hiding out in America now, has a different name and whatnot. We know
in Florida.
In Florida. It's always Florida.
It's always Florida.
We know he's a creep, and we know he has gross ideas and a lot of eugenic things to say about people. Uh-huh. And then the sister is, the family is Cuban, and there's a lot of talk about the importance of the prayer and family and the strong boys and the feisty women, and it would make sense coming out of the doctor's mouth, but it's coming out of this Cuban character's mouth who's being written by a white lady with no ties to Cuba who has two cats named Fidel and Shay. So I read it and it was so Frankenstein-y and whatnot that I went, Ashley, I need you and I need your opinion. So that's where I lie on this one.
Yep. And so I loved it based purely on the story. My note on that one was, well, that was fucked up. A minus. and that minus is solely because of the white ladyism of it is weird. I'm willing to forgive her a little bit more than you are for it because it is based on a true thing and it's just like a novelization of a thing that really did happen and really was fucked up.
Yeah.
There are photos on the internet.
Yeah,
you can find them. Don't.
I don't recommend it, but also, like, I did it, so.
Yeah. Now you have to, too.
I'm not that against it, I guess. The weird thing for me is that it's being marketed to us as if it is new, but it has been out in the UK for, like, 2 years?
Yeah,
2 years?
Two or
yeah,
3 years.
Yeah, and it, like, won some awards and stuff.
It's being marketed as new and being marketed as this important feminist piece with what's going on with bodily autonomy and whatnot right now, but it's
not really that.
It's like, not that. It's a well-told story of a horrible thing about a woman written in the voice of a woman and written by a woman, but there's nothing.
But none of that makes it like
yeah.
Just because it has all those things doesn't mean it's like a
it's
feminist piece. Yeah,
it's just a gross, creepy, that has a lot of ladies in it.
Yeah. And that's why booksellers are important, because sometimes the marketing is wrong, and the booksellers can be like, okay, so actually, here's what this is about.
I also don't know why it's hanging so hard on the Orpheus thing when it's definitely a Pygmalion story and not Orpheus, but I don't know.
Yeah. Well, there you go. There you have it.
There you have it.
So, yeah, we read it, and we're thinking about it.
Yep.
Yeah. It's in there.
Mm-hmm.
Another one on my list that my notes for this are just, ouch, ouch, my heart, ouch. A Little Life by Hanya Yanagihara.
Ooh.
This is a book that I did not enjoy the experience of reading, but it is gorgeous. It's so well written, but ouch. It, like, I mean, I guess if you are in the need for a really good cry, or you just want to be like, well, I guess my life isn't that bad, that is the book to read, because oh God, Hanya Yanagihara really took this very sweet young gay character and just tortured him for like 1,000 pages, and it is so sad and it just hurts. It hurts a lot, but like, I don't know, sometimes you want to read a sad book, so like, there you go. I also Sharp Objects by Gillian Flynn.
Ooh.
Is another one that's like, it's so visceral that I cringed my way through it, because the main character self-harms in a very specific and unique way, and I could feel it the whole time I was reading it, and I was like, I hate this, but I love Gillian Flynn and I really like the story, like I really like the book. But oh God, was it hard to read. I just was like, I had the book in front of me and it was just like every muscle was clenched and like the book was just like perched on the table while I just couldn't, and then I would like reach forward and like turn the page and be like, ah!
I felt that way about Dark Places, which I loved, but was so distressing.
Yeah.
And I read it on a plane.
Oh, God.
So I had to keep myself together, and then when I was done, I left it in the seat back.
That's so valid.
Somebody will read this, someone else's and they'll think now. Some things, but if I carry this any further, I think I'm going to get cursed.
Yeah, I'm just going to shrivel up.
Good book.
Yeah, I mean, Gillian Flynn is an incredible writer for that reason. Like, she, really, really gets in there. and then I do have a couple of hate reads on my list, which is always fun. And I say these with love.
Love of reading.
Yeah, it was fun to hate read these. And if you know anything about our dear friend Sam, you know about hate reads. Sam loves a hate read, and she has talked about it on the podcast before. She and I both hate read Men Have Called Her Crazy.
Oh, I did too.
Yeah, you did.
Oh man. You want to get real mad?
Oh man, what a book. I listened to that book. It's by Anna-Marie Tendler, who is John Mulaney's ex. And she's cuckoo. oh boy.
I have never read anything that tattled on itself so hard before. But
wow, what a narcissist.
Yeah.
Yeah, and just okay. So I listened to this while going for a run last year, and it really did power me through my run, I'll tell you that much. It is all about her basically trying to get a diagnosis. She, like, checks herself into a mental facility and is trying to get a diagnosis, and ultimately just disagrees with the diagnosis. And it's just like, actually, these doctors are misogynists and they're wrong.
Oh boy.
And so it's like, what was the point of any of this? And she's just real narcissistic and just considers herself the victim in every possible scenario ever. And it's just real, real hard to read because you're just like, this is not an issue. This is what you're... This problem you're describing is not a problem. Like, stop it.
Yeah. You have created this problem.
Yeah.
Yet if I call that out, I am the bad guy.
Yeah, it's real rough. Oh. It was real, real bad. And...
We had to know.
Just had to know. And then the other one, listen, Catcher in the Rye. I get it. But I read it too late in my life to appreciate it. And so it's really just Holden Caulfield is a whiny little bugger. And I don't care about him and his phonies and the duck pond. And I just don't care. You're being really annoying. Stop it. Stop it. Go live a real life. This is a non-issue. These things are dumb. Stop complaining.
If I may interject.
Please.
My mom, last year, also read it for the first time, because she had escaped reading it in school, and then was like, oh, it feels like everyone's read it. Well, what am I missing? I should read it. it was right after my husband had reread it, and, like, I think had been talking about it at, like, Christmas or something, and so then she was, like, inspired. So one night, one morning, she had texted, "What is wrong with your husband?" To which I replied, 2 question marks. She said, "Or what is wrong with me? I do not understand, not even a tiny bit, how Catcher in the Rye became a classic." I laughed. She said, "I must be missing something."
Oh my God.
And I said, "You just missed the boat on it. Has to be read as a teen. When you read it as an adult, it only fills you with rage."
Yep.
She said, "I considered that, but boredom is what I'm filled with."
Oh, that's even funnier.
I read it in the in-between phase.
Oh, interesting.
Like, I didn't read it in high school. It wasn't required. I just knew of it. So I read it when I was probably 24, 25, because I love the 7 short stories, and I love Franny and Zoe. So I'm like, all right, got to get in there. And so I think I read it at exactly the right time to appreciate the drama of it without getting too annoyed with the teenageness of it. But there was a guy who used to hang out across the street from my house outside the law school with a copy of it in the back of his jeans and try to take it out and talk to every woman who came by. I used to stand in my yard and yell at him. And then I started shooting him with the hose.
Amazing.
Do what you gotta do.
Don't be that guy.
Don't be that guy.
You could have the best book in the world, and if you're that guy, I'm gonna shoot you with the hose.
Yeah.
If I do that, you can shoot me with a hose. It's fine. Ugh.
And, like, here's the thing about Catcher in the Rye is that I read it so many years ago, and I still remember so much about it. So it's like, I do understand why it persists. Mm-hmm. Like, I have the worst memory of all time, but I remember a lot of details about Catcher in the Rye. So, like, I'm like, all right, I get it. I do. I just is not for me. I was never an angsty boy. I just couldn't do it. But when I read it in college, and we were so evenly split down the middle between people who despised it and people who loved it. And I found that really funny, that I was just like, nope, I'm on the hate side. I cannot with this book. I will never hand sell it. Unless you're specifically looking for it, I'll be like, here it is. But I get it. Like, I get why it's assigned in high school. Like, I understand, so.
And this is where I leap into the ring.
Yes!
And just take Lolita down from the top rope.
Yes! I have that on my
Yes! Go for it!
It took me so many years to finally fight my way through it. I'd been trying and then going, ugh! Since I was 15, probably, when some 30-year-old man handed it to me the first time. But I finally forced my way through it a couple of years ago so I could cross it off on a bingo checklist, like, got my white whale out of the way.
Yep.
And also because I read, when it was brand new, Kate Elizabeth Russell's My Dark Vanessa, which is an incredible novel about a woman who was abused, but because of how deep and intrinsic and just normalized this sort of behavior is, she can't see that she's a victim. And it that book made people furious because this woman, she's not likable. It's like, excuse me, do you know how being a woman works? It's not great. And you do what you have to do to get by. But that finally made me read Lolita in detail so I could be truly versed in what I hate.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's well written. Yeah, he's a wonderful author. But it is a how-to guide to be a pedophile.
Yeah.
It is what you need to do, how you need to do it, and how you can reason with yourself to think it's not a bad thing that you're doing. And plenty of us can read that and understand that, but the cult of worship around this novel that still has it, until the most recent edition, it still had a blurb on the cover that said it was one of the greatest love stories ever told.
Ew!
No!
So hard.
No.
Get the hose.
No. Yep. Hose time. Hose time, everybody.
Oh, good.
Just, ugh, Lolita, it makes me so mad. I hate it. Ashley.
So I have a funny backstory with Lolita. Are you familiar with the advanced studies program at St. Paul's in the summer?
No.
Smart
Camp?
Oh,
yeah.
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 Okay. So
yeah.
I went to Smart Camp, and I was there for biology. My roommate was in, like, the banned books class or whatever.
Cool.
It wasn't called that, I don't think, but that's basically what it was. And so it was just the two of us, but we got lucky, and we were in a triple room.
Nice.
And so, whatever. Lolita ends up being one of the books that they have to read for their class, and I have always been a go-to-bed-early kind of girl, because I also like to wake up early. So I was very much asleep one night when she was reading Lolita, and all of a sudden, I feel her, like, shaking me. She's like,
can I sleep with you?
Oh.
Like, so freaked out by it. So we, like, took the three beds and made a monster bed. Like, then she felt safe, and it was very funny and very cute. And so I was like, ooh, I don't think I'm ever going to read that one. And then, like, 10 years later, I was like, yeah, I'm going to go for it. And, yeah, it's gross. Super fucking gross.
Wow.
My little note, though, was... feels weird to have enjoyed it so much. The writing is so, so good. Like, it pulls you in, it keeps you in, because otherwise there's no redeeming quality.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's that might get a reread sometime in the near future.
Yeah.
Just to see if I can still stomach it.
Wow.
Blug. Ugh, speaking of books where bad things happen, but I'm all right with continuing to think about them and whatnot, C.J. Houser, who wrote the viral Crane Wife short story article a couple of years ago, had an incredible novel called called Family of Origin, and... y'all, I love Geek Love, and this is one of the most messed up families I've ever read about, and I really enjoyed it, and I really liked these terrible people, and they do terrible things to each other, and nobody feels bad about it, and it's one of those things where I'd love to hand it to somebody, but I don't want them to think that I endorse any of it. I do not endorse the things happening in Family of Origin, but I do recommend you read it.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah. It's
serious.
It goes in directions that you did not think it was going to go in. It seems like a fairly straightforward novel about biological research, and then it goes bananas.
Fun.
Absolutely bananas. In the world of absolutely bananas, there are two books that I read years ago that... parts of them freaked me out so badly that I still have those scenes stuck in my head all the time. And if I'm having a particularly stressful day or whatnot, and I accidentally think about one of those things, it just messes me up for the rest of the day. One is Karen Russell's short stories, Vampires in the Lemon Grove.
Oh.
One of my favorite authors, magical realism, Southern Gothic, banana pants.
Yeah.
But there's one short story about this pale rider in the desert and what it takes to make a house and a garden full of bones that, it's making my bones itch right now just thinking about it. And then the other is Robert Jackson Bennett's American Elsewhere, which is kind of the American Southwest meets eldritch horror. There are these giant alien space monsters, and also this kind of boots on the ground girl kind of making her way through these creepy motels and whatnot. But the space monsters are so distressing that if you see them, breaks your brain, you gotta kill yourself. And the way that people do it, there's this thing with a... incinerator dish disposal that I gotta stop talking about now or I'm not gonna be able to eat dinner.
Oh dear.
But yeah, those books are great. They're just... they make my tummy hurt.
That's a little bit how I felt reading Wake Up and Open Your Eyes by Clay McLeod Chapman. There's a lot in that book that I was just going, no, Clay, no. Oh God. But I loved it. It's real good. Everyone should read it. It's freakishly relevant.
I have a handful that were, just like really sad. And it was like, why did I keep going?
For sure.
One of them, Merle's Door, Ted Carasote, he's like off on a camping trip or something and like finds this dog just loose in the wilds and
adopts him and is just like a memoir of this guy and his dog.
Oh.
It's super sweet. My blurb is, what a wonderful tribute to a very good boy. Oh. As most books about dogs do, like, the dog obviously dies, and, Tim read this one before me, and, when he knew he was getting close to the part, because it's, like, right at the end, he knew he was getting close to the sad part, so he, like, waited for me to leave for work for the day so he could finish it, and I wouldn't, aww, like, see him getting misty about it.
Aww.
And then he, like, hands it off to me, and when it's my turn, I'm like, I know that Merle's gonna die, and I know that you were embarrassed to, like, cry in front of me about it, so, like, it's gonna be sad.
Yeah.
What this asshole failed to tell me,
oh, no,
is that, like, two chapters before Merle's death, he's, like, sick, and guys to bring him to the vet, and they're, like, in the waiting room, and this other dog gets, like, rushed in and, like, oh, dies. And that was devastating.
Oh, no.
So I think I'm, like, still in the safe zone. Like, it's nighttime. I'm on my side of the couch. Tim's on his. I'm reading. Like, I'm so far from the sad part. Like, this is fine. And then all of a sudden, I'm just a puddle.
Oh, oh no.
10 out of 10. Give it a read.
20 out of 10 tissues.
Yes.
Aww.
And then a couple others, not dog death, but human deaths. Smallest lights in the universe, Sarah Seeger. She's like an MIT astrophysicist, and her husband like unexpectedly dies. She's like 40. She's got two little kids, but she like turns her grief into, like, pushes it all into her work, and does some really cool science stuff. She, in the beginning, I've blocked details from my memory, but in my note, I was like, oh yeah, she also talked about her dad dying when she was younger. And so my blurb was, some real dad sads, because I read it a few months after my dad had died. Some real dad sads at the beginning, followed by worst fear dead husband sad bits.
Oh,
but good
no.
stuff other than that, space is the coolest. and then another one, like, sort of along the same lines, Lost and Found, Catherine Schulz. My best friend had given this to me. She's also in the Dead Dad Club, and when she let me borrow it, she's like, if it's still too soon, like, that's fine. I'm not looking to get this back anytime soon. Hold on to it as long as you need. Blah, blah, blah. I dove right in, and in the beginning of the book, Catherine, like, meets and falls in love with the woman who ultimately becomes her wife, but then, like, right on the heels of all that happiness, her dad has, like, a minor heart attack or something, or, like, there's something with his heart, and he, like, goes to the hospital for it, but then, like, does not come back.
Oh, God.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so it's tough stuff. So sad during the sad bits, and so nauseating during the falling in love bits.
Ew.
But so well and beautifully written that I'm willing to forgive the author for making me cry so much and gag a little.
Oh, I love that.
Beautiful.
So, yeah, I recommend both of those as well, but yeah, have the tissues nearby.
Yeah, for reals. There was one book that, so, like, and I feel like I read this book a little bit before, or maybe, like, right when I was starting to get into reading more horror, so probably I would read this now and be fine. But, so Paula Hawkins, Girl on the Train, massive, massive, massive hit. Everyone read it, everyone loved it, including me. And then she wrote a book called A Slow Fire Burning. And I was like, oh my God, I'm so excited for this new book. And I'm reading it and I'm like, this is so good. What a good mystery. Oh my God. And then there is a character death that I was so blindsided by. And the circumstances around the death were so unexpectedly triggering for me that I almost didn't finish the book. And I was like, this is, I'm angry, mm-hmm. I'm upset. Like, this is so, I didn't feel like she had earned that character death mm-hmm. in the way that she wrote it. I was like, this feels too much. I don't feel like this is necessary to the plot. But I did, I finished it, and it is a very good book. And ultimately, I was like, okay, I can see where this character death, you know, informed other characters and their decisions. And so, sure, I guess it was necessary, but wow, it really rocked me in a way that I have never recommended that book. I have read her other stuff, and it's great, and I will continue reading her, and I, you know, even that book, like, is good, but I don't think I've ever been so, like, blindsided by a book, and so deeply, like, not since I was a child and didn't know how story structure worked, have I been so deeply affected by the death, and particularly the circumstances of the death of a character. So
you got Bridge to Terabithia.
I did! But I was, like, more angry than anything, because it was one of those things where, like, it's the death of a child, which is always rough. Mm-hmm. But again, I read a lot of horror. I kind of...
What about when it's a really cruddy child?
Yeah. I kind of root for those, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Victorian cycle.
Exactly. But this one is, like, pure negligence and stupidity on the, like, base, on the adult side. And it's because of alcoholism that they are hiding from their family. And so it's, like, it's not even, like, the mom of the kid. It's, like, the aunt of the kid is, like, passed out drunk and not paying attention to the child she's supposed to be watching. And the child walks off a balcony. And it just comes out of nowhere. And I, you know, had two alcoholic parents. And I was like, wow. Wow, did not need to read that today. Again, I think if I read it now, I'm so kind of, like, used to trauma in books at this point. I think I would be like, okay, yeah, that makes sense that this aunt is later going to be really fucked up and not able to think through things clearly. And obviously this needed to inform, but it takes the place of a flashback. And it's the first time in the book that there is a flashback as opposed to just someone kind of telling the story. And so I was, like, not expecting to be in the scene as opposed to her just being like, I fucked up and my niece died. Like, whoo! I was like, Paula! Why? Why?
What did I do to you, Paula?
What did I do to you? So that was, yeah, that one. I have literally never hand sold, never recommended it. I didn't write a review for it. I wasn't even sure I had finished it. I had to look it up in Storygraph and be like, did I actually finish this book? I did. I did finish it, but I was not happy about it. And then I guess, you know, we can't really have this discussion without just taking just a moment to be like, there are certain books that I will not recommend because of who wrote them.
Oh, yeah.
And unfortunately, that list keeps growing.
Yes.
Which is, you know.
That's why we can't have nice things.
Troubling and upsetting. But, you know, it is a thing. It is a thing. And, you know, we're a general interest bookstore, so we're going to have things on the shelf that maybe we as booksellers don't like that we have on the shelf, but we're going to have them on the shelf because that is it's a business, and we, you know, we don't want to be censoring things, just, you know, there's enough of that happening, and it's bad. So, but if you ask our honest opinions, we might we tell you them.
We'll continue to promote and platform and display
other
things that we can stand for, yes, and are happy to include.
Yes.
But just don't expect to see some of those other things front and center.
Right. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, I don't think we need to go into big details. I think people listening to this can probably figure out what we're referencing.
Yeah.
And there's a few out there that it's always disappointing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and there's a lot of things that I'm like, oh, I can't reference my favorite books as a child. Because I just can't anymore. Mm-hmm. And so I guess I'm going to rewrite my own history a little bit.
Still happy to say that my favorite author of my childhood, Daniel Pinkwater, not a problem, but hey, still good.
All right.
Yeah.
Love that. I keep losing mine.
No.
So.
On the bright side, there are so many books.
Yes.
There are.
You can.
There are so many books.
And find real good replacements. When you
so many different ones.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And in some cases, like, the books themselves, for one of my former favorite authors, the books are still beautiful and mm-hmm. fantastic. And I, you know, might never buy anything new by that person, but I'm not opposed to, you know, the content of the books is mm-hmm. fine. Whereas with the other one, now I have a new lens to read them through, and I'm like, hey, wait,
you ruined it.
Hey, wait, there's a lot of problematic stuff in this series. Actually, turns out.
Trying to throw a jokey name out this whole time, like some beloved still living author that we all know about that nothing could. And now I'm worried that if I say it,
it'll come true.
It'll curse them.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, something along the lines of saying, like, oh, Mr. Rogers really turned... And Mr. Rogers turned out to be a perfect man. Hooray! Thank you, Fred Rogers. But I'm so afraid to say any joke answer now in case I don't know, in case I open the bag and a really bad cat comes out.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. So... I'll sort of leave it at that, but just know.
There goes that cat.
Just know that we have feelings.
Yeah.
And if you want to talk to us about our feelings, you can. So yeah, like is a strong word.
It is a strong word.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And we can't love everything we read, but sometimes we do, even despite what the book was.
Yep, love talking about it, nonetheless.
Yeah. Yes. And I highly recommend coming in and being like, what's the most insane book you've ever read? Because we all have an answer.
Yep.
But also be prepared to tell us yours.
Yes.
Yeah, I want to hear everybody's stories about the books that just are stuck in their brain despite them not wanting them there.
Yep. Yes.
Come find us.
Yep. Come find us and tell us about it, because maybe we've also read it. We also can't stop thinking about it. Or maybe we're about to find our new favorite weird book. Mm-hmm. Read Spread Me.
Do it.
It comes out in October, I think.
Yes. I wish it came out now for
I know.
Summer heat and whatnot, but
oh, Boise, what a book. What a book. I finally read that book, the arc of it, because Katie Robert, I think I've probably told this story, Katie Robert, the steamy romance author, talked about it on stage at the Cap Center. And I heard her over the speaker say armpit vagina, and I went, I know what book that is.
Now I do too.
And I think I had either just read it or I was like in the middle of it, and I was like, Katie!
Katie's blurb is on the cover now, too.
It sure is. Anyway, what a note to wrap up on. I'm going to talk about Libra FM real quick, and I'm also going to talk about our audiobook walk. We did an audiobook walk this month, and it was real, real fun, so we're going to do another one in August, where literally you show up at 10 a.m. on August 23rd, meet us outside, gonna put your headphones in, and we're gonna go for a 1 mile walk around Concord. We're all just gonna be listening to our own little audiobooks, and when you get back, you go shopping. What a time! It's great. We had like 20 people for the first one, and it was raining, and a ton of people were like, oh my god, I'm going to the next one. So we're gonna have a fun little audiobook parade in August. So join us for that. And if you don't already have Libre FM, you can use the code LAYDOWN at checkout when you start a new membership and get an extra free audio credit. And it's great. They're great. We love them. I'm wearing a shirt right now that says, I read while driving. That's from Libre FM, and I love them so much. You can email us about the podcast at thelaydownpodcast@gmail.com. For a shoppable list of all the books we've discussed during this episode, you can click the link in our show notes or go to gibsonsbookstore.com/laydown-books. Make sure you're following us on your favorite social media platforms. We're on most of them. And all of those links will be in the show notes. Thank you all so much for listening. Don't forget to subscribe so you'll know when we upload our next episode. And consider leaving us a nice review. Until next time, we'll see you in the bookstore. Bye! Bye!